right. Welcome, everyone. So this is a very impromptu show, only because yesterday, even though I wasn't even working on this, this is how quantum upgrades work. I was trying to figure out a way to convey what is to come, but not just saying, hey, I just know things, because I sincerely dislike when someone just says, well, just trust me. You know, so I thought that I would kind of take you through. You remember that episode we did on September 9th, where I talked to you about and I introduced you to one of the people that I admire, and I've worked at their lab, well, as an intern, right? They have so many. But I was very interested in the research he was doing in 2008 with the using Mycobacterium genitalium that failed, and then he used another one, you know, and how he's creating life, and how, you know, I told you that was 2014 and a lot can happen in 6 years. Remember that? And you know how when President Trump announced Kodak, I told you, what does Kodak do? And everyone's like, oh, printing. So take that, have that in mind while you listen to that under two minute segment again and watch of Greg Mentner talking about teleportation, right? So that was interesting. You need to hear it again. So that way, the next little pieces of tidbits you're going to hear make a lot of sense, because everyone wants to know what's going on with, and I don't even want to say the word, should we say controller virus? Because, you know, now Facebook is censoring on that one too. So we're going to start with that. And you're going to just chill out. This is going to be a very short show. Listen to it. And then we're going to move it along to the other clips. And you're going to be like, oh, now I get it. Here we go.
So with the biological teleportation, which is life at the speed of light, we have two different parts to it. We have the ascending unit, which can actually read the genetic code of something, send it up to the cloud. And then the second part is the receiving unit that we call a digital biological converter. Some like to call a replicator, depending on where in science fiction history we're coming from. And it takes the digital code, rewrites the genetic code chemically. And then once you have genomes built from the DNA, you can go in any direction. This got a real-world test recently with the outbreak of H7N9 flu in China. A team of Chinese scientists isolated the virus from the patient, sequenced it, and posted it on the internet. And at the request of the U.S. government, we downloaded it and in less than 12 hours synthesized the H7N9 virus, which for a long time was the only source that the CDC and the U.S. government and Novartis had of this new emerging strain. Right now, from our process, there's actually been a flu vaccine being developed for the first time ahead of time of a new potentially very dangerous strain. So the notion I describe in my book is that one day everybody will have one of these little devices on their home computer, and we can stop pandemics before they start, because in areas where there's outbreaks, you just download the vaccine and vaccinate people very quickly, and we can stop the spread of things. But we have a long way to go to achieve those levels. But these devices are real now. We have built the prototypes, and they're in actual use.
So that was 2014, right? Interesting. We have prototypes of teleporting, or we would say remotely printing chemical compounds that are tailor-made for you to amplify genes, to fight viruses, right? Okay. So here's where we're going to the next part. Let's get an introduction on Kodak's specialty. That should be very interesting because, you know, one thing I can tell you is out of all printers that I've ever purchased, and I urge you to debunk this or see it, you'll get to know that Kodak has the most efficient ink there is. And I print a lot. And Kodak printers can put every single printer out of business, printing what did he say? Upload and then have a little device that can print it or teleport the right chemicals, or just take a listen.
Situated in a manufacturing community in upstate New York, one of only 12 such federally designated regions in the country, in a multi-tenant industrial park, Kodak provides unique specialty chemicals operation for custom organic synthesis with toll manufacturing capabilities from pilot kilos to several hundreds of metric tons and a proprietary database of over 100,000 molecules. Kodak's Specialty Chemicals Group, with a long history of quality-focused technology and production, is flourishing at Eastman Business Park. When working with Kodak's Specialty Chemicals Group, customers have access to a full suite of pilot and analytical tools, which supports cost-effective development and rapid product acceleration with reduced risk. Come leverage an extensive stage gate commercialization process that includes raw material global sourcing, comprehensive HSE services, a vast portfolio of over 1,500 approved manufacturing processes, incredibly tight statistical process controls, secure communications connecting the customer to the project, and lean methodologies to optimize supply chain efficiencies. Kodak Specialty Chemicals Group offers wide-ranging chemical production assets maintained with a reputable and trusted corporation's care. Our strong team of experienced personnel and technical specialists are associated with the research, product development, and manufacturing operations at Kodak. No matter what the job, with a diverse portfolio of over 1,500 approved manufacturing processes, our team knows how to get the job done. Our expertise in complex heterocyclic chemistry is born from years of inventing functional dyes, couplers, polymers, and other materials for film and paper. Kodak's Specialty Chemicals Group is an entrepreneurial environment with a customer-focused culture, backed by a powerful brand and a high degree of recognition and trust in the chemical community. It's all here. A specialty chemicals operation that ranks among the very best in the world. Located at the intersection of imaging science and materials science, serving customers in diverse markets. Kodak's Specialty Chemicals Group at Eastman Business Park.
That's also 2014, by the way. 2014. So yeah, so I thought I would show you this. Now, that tells you how things are going to be delivered shortly to our homes. We'll have devices, and they will be custom tailor-made, and that's it. But here's the scary part. So you see that the United Kingdom put out a report saying that when you're tested for COVID, they take your DNA and your biometrics and they file you. First, they said, oh, we're only doing criminals when we take their DNA swab and we put them on the system, or if you work for the government, and that's all. But see, I thought you should understand just how troubling the military-industrial complex and predictive analytics really are, okay? And why they're such a big race to win and be in charge, because this is the future. And I found some really interesting portions of things that Craig Venter talked about, things that I've been trying to infer without getting people very scared of what the future holds for all of us if we allow the military-industrial complex to continue on the path that they are at. And the reason is because predictive analytics is not only what they have on the shadow net, right? And using your shadow against you, or using your social media. And I've told you, your AI profile is the most important profile you have. 6G is actually going to separate it. And this is how we are going to be able to be printing out molecular things. I mean, I didn't even know that companies like Kodak and Fuji, which are printers, are printing things like organic material, as you heard them say, and custom organic synthesis, as you heard them say, and as you heard Craig Venter tell you, that they have the ability and they already have the prototype to teleport this stuff. So that's 6 years ago. Think about it. You buy your computer today. When is it worthless? Oh, that's right. In about a couple days. Something newer is out. Kind of like your phone. Every year, you want the next one. So think about that. Now, in addition to what I've been constantly saying, that when you go and get tested, those idiots running through drive-throughs or accepting testing when they have no symptoms, it's all because they want your DNA. And if you actually read fine print, it tells you that they share it with federal agencies and other people, all the information, right? Well, here's where predictive analytics comes in again. And this is where it gets a little bit, this is why it's very important to make sure we have the right person in office when this technology comes to the forefront. Only because it's quite an incredible technology. So here is something from 2017 that's going to blow your mind. Ready?
Our goal is to combine all these findings, and these were unexpected findings. We thought we were just going to have a healthy cohort because everybody that comes to the health nucleus is self-defined healthy. But it turns out the definition of health is pretty limited. It means you don't have any symptoms and you look okay and you feel okay. So we can actually tell you whether you're healthy. Turns out you can't tell us you're healthy. And we're finding things overall in about 40% of the healthy clients that come to see us are presumed healthy clients. And we're trying to combine all the symptomology, all of the things we can measure with the genome, with machine learning. And we've been making more and more discoveries as the data set grows, developing biomarkers. For example, we've discovered a gene duplication in people with greatly distended aortas that seems to be definitely familial. An example of machine learning and one of the early machine learning projects we did was to see if we could predict people's faces just from their genetic code, and also to see if we could predict their voices. So we took 3D photos of 1,000 people. We recorded their voice, both reading something and free speaking, sequenced their genomes, amongst other things. The voice was very interesting. We're not yet able to predict that straight from the genetic code, but it's getting closer. But just from a digital voice recording, the machine learning can tell the age, the sex, and the height of the person making the recording. Means that if this was put in use, Donald Trump could have never pretended to be his own press secretary before.
So I want you to understand what he's saying. So he's telling you that they have the technology to do this, but he's also telling you, if I have your DNA, just your DNA, like, you know, that I collect somewhere from a cup you throw away, or I don't know, maybe a vagina test, I can use that and pretty much get a picture of what you look like. Take a listen. This is very real.
But we think because perfect pitch is genetic that we will get to the point of being able to predict voices accurately from the genome. Faces were a little bit better. We recently published a paper on this. In the report that we give to people on their genomes, it starts with their predicted height, predicted weight, predicted BMI, eye color, hair color, and skin tone, and their face. So the 3D photos are not...
Okay, I want you to see. So the picture that you see there that says subject is the computer image that was created just from their DNA. And then on the other side, they're going to show you the actual image of the person who had provided their DNA. I want you to pay attention to this very carefully.
Very attractive photos. They bring out all the flaws in people's face. We smooth them a little bit. It helps with the algorithm. even though we predict eye color and eye shape right now, we don't include that in the predictions. But this is the prediction just from this woman's genetic code from the machine learning algorithm. Now, keep in mind, this is just the face mask. If you look at somebody next to you, you don't see just their face mask. You see whether they have hair or not, the color of their hair, their eye color, shape of their head, etc. We're adding the shape of the skull from MRI images, and I think that will help. People actually have ears, so we're going to be adding ears again from MRI. Here's another example of a young male, and here's the computer prediction just from his genome. A lot of this is based on ethnicity, so when there's mixed ethnicity, it actually makes it a lot easier. So here's the prediction from this young African-American. It's getting better. 1,000 is a very small data set for machine learning, and so we're adding to it over time. People can accurately usually identify themselves. The predictions come out to your age just post-puberty, so they won't look like what you do now. Other people can identify roughly 1 out of 10. When we get to 100, they start to look a lot more similar, particularly if they're all Caucasians. So the data set was very mixed, and so we're improving on this all the time, but it proves that we can generate a photo. We can identify individuals, a combination from their HLA antigens and all the other predictive factors plus the face. So we want to expand the number of people that we have for our database because that's the most important thing. And so we've started what we call the HNX, and it's a specialized a version of the health nucleus that will have two Siemens MRI machines and a CT, a cardiac CT scanner. The basic version will include just the genome sequence and the comprehensive suite of all the things you've seen from the MRI imaging. There's an intermediate or gold level that will add for people over 35 cardiac CT scans and some extensive blood work and some metabolome work.
So let me tell you why this is here. So this is the price that you can get. So you can get your DNA and the computer. Basically what you do is you go there, you pay for this, you give your DNA, and then the computer will say, this is how you look based on your DNA and how you are now. Based on your DNA without these factors, this is how you should look. And this is what you can get sick of. This is for people to be able to see things. Now, I want to take you back in time to where there was communism in the USSR. So they actually were pretty happy at the beginning. And the reason that they were happy was because they all had jobs. From a very young age, the government would pick what area of study you would go in. So they would usually find children and see which ones looked like they had the body shape. And they knew this from science because our technology is a lot more ahead than what is allowed in the public eye. So this is why they had the best ballerinas, the best runners, the best pole vaulters, the best everything, because they would use your genetics to put you in the right job you should have and compete and do. So if you came from a lineage of this, based on your DNA, and you're going to be like, wait a minute, Tori, we're talking like, you know, mid last century. Yeah, this technology existed. You just didn't know about it. Here is where now it's coming to the public. These are tools that communist governments use. This is why in China, certain people advance faster and do things. This is why they have their best athletes, their best computer people, the best this, because they target them from a young age. If you have long fingers, they will recruit you to be a pianist. If you, you know, I'm just saying, very layman here. This is how they identify. Now a computer does it for them. It will also say how you may die and how they need to insure you. Insurance companies can take this and decide what insurance you can get. Now, this is if it's in the wrong hands, it can get to that point. This is where, you know, all of this comes in. This is where the control comes in. And I am making you aware because this will be coming up soon. I mean, we see that, you know, Elon, who I write a letter to every year asking for a Tesla, still hasn't responded, of course. I mean, it would be just a write-off for him, right? He's competing now to print out these things in predictive analytics. Think about it. There are benefits on the fact that, hey, you have a device at home. You know, you pop your finger in. It takes your blood, analyzes it, sends it off. And then the doctor's like, all right, print this medicine, sends you the file. You click, and then the chemicals just put them together, or you have to buy some chemicals, or they send you some chemicals if you don't have them. And in this little thing, you just get the medicine you need. Boom, done. In like seconds, you're done. And this is to increase, I would say, the quality of life for the longevity that you're allowed to have based on your software. Now, that's kind of crazy, right? But think, for people that like power, how much control that gives them into how they advance and how they work and how they do and how they place people in different jobs and how they do things. I mean, this is early level quantum computing. Okay. Algorithm still on basic, but this is early level quantum computing because I've said it before. Your mind is clearly biological software. Now, no one's figured out how to hijack it, hence why they are trying to merge it with what they do understand, which is tangible inert technology. So now we're going to go over to the next video that I would like to show you from 2018, talking about kind of the same stuff again. And that's where I would like to leave you with that today, as food for thought on a Sunday. And this one is called Redesigning Longevity. And this is where he's at the World Government Summit. Be like, what? Yes, the World Government Summit in 2018 speaking. So we're going to watch this together. It's a good 15 minutes. It's pretty interesting. Take a listen.
And studying the structure of DNA and how to interpret it for a long time. And we're trying to extend that now into understanding how to extend healthy human life. So when we first started reading the genetic code, we call it digitizing life. It's converting the four-letter code into ones and zeros in the computer. And we did this first in 1995 with the very first genome. And there are fundamental questions of, does DNA contain all the necessary information for life? So we decided to go the other way and start with the ones and zeros and see if we could recapitulate life by doing that. So we used some of the information from the first genome, but we had to learn how to actually write the genetic code. We did this first with a small virus that infects E. coli. And the virus was about 5,000 base pairs long. We made it chemically. We injected it into E. coli. And this was the first experiment of what happened. E. coli read the synthetic piece of DNA, like normal DNA, started making proteins. The protein self-assembled and made the virus, and the virus killed the cells. So we call this a situation where the software builds its own hardware. We wrote a piece of chemical code, put it in a bacteria, and it made a virus. So our goal wasn't to make a virus, it was to make an entire cell, one base pair at a time. This took much longer than we thought it would, but over that time, we developed a wide range of technologies that enabled us to actually write the genetic code very effectively. So the chemistry was one side, the biology was another. And we had to develop a way to boot up now this total synthetic chromosome that we had made. And fundamentally, we have a cell where we inject the DNA into the cell. And so this cell now has two sets of genetic instructions. As soon as the new DNA started being read, it made enzymes that chewed up the original DNA in the cell, giving us an entire new cell. So we ended up with these cells that not a single previous molecule in the cells had existed. They all originated from the piece of synthetic DNA. Now, this was sort of the control experiment in 2010. We spent the next 5 years designing a new cell in the computer, made the DNA, and booted it up. The biggest surprise is about a third of the genes were unknown to science, showing that we're very early still in our understanding of genomes. But one thing it did show us is that DNA sequence was interconvertible with the digital world. So we could take a piece of DNA, sequence it, digitize it, and then we could take that digital information and convert it back to DNA. So we made a machine that actually does this. It's called a biological teleporter or a digital biological converter. And we can actually send the information through the internet. We can send it through radio waves to Mars, et cetera. And we tested this early on with the flu outbreak. So we have an epidemic going on right now with flu because the vaccine that was given doesn't match the flu strain that's actually infecting people because they make these decisions almost a year in advance. We sequence a strain breakout, H11N9, in China. The Chinese group sequenced, posted to the internet. We made that sequence in a week. And got it into a lab in Novartis to scale up very quickly, making a new vaccine against that viral strain. So instead of taking years to do this, the U.S. government, in fact, decided to use this for emergency flu outbreaks and stockpiled a large amount of the virus. But nothing's really happening with changing how we approach flu vaccines. So instead of having one center to do this, Dubai, for example, had its own center, we can send the information for a new vaccine around the world in a fraction of a second. It could be made locally and distributed. So technology exists, we're just not using it. Now, flu is not the biggest killer of people on the planet at the moment. If you live to the age of 50, about a third of you won't live to the age of 74. As you can see, it's slightly worse for men. About 40% of men won't make the age of 74. And about 24% of women won't live to be the age of 74. The two biggest reasons are heart disease and cancer. So when we were thinking of setting up how to change human longevity, we decided we had to tackle all diseases, but first and foremost, predicting cancer, predicting heart disease. Medicine today is if you have symptoms, you go get those symptoms checked out to find out if you have a disease. Sometimes that can be late-stage cancer. We're dealing with four women in their early 30s that have stage 4 colon cancer. That's somewhat confusing because in the U.S., you're not supposed to get screened for colon cancer till you're 50 years old. So we're taking new techniques for early detection. We've set up a new whole body assessment that combines the genome with multiple modality testing. And we only screen people who think they're healthy. We combine all this data with machine learning to make new discoveries about disease and how to treat it and how to prevent it. In part, we have exciting new technologies. Using the latest MRI machines from Siemens or GE, we have algorithms that can do post-processing on that data and cause a tumor cell to light up very brightly. This is just based on the water differences in tumor cells versus regular cells. So we use no contrast in the MRI. About 5% of people who get MRI contrast have a bad allergic reaction to it. And also, people used to use just CT scans. CT scans are x-rays. They can't tell the difference between a cyst and a tumor. So here's an example of a physician, one of our first clients to come in, who had no symptoms, but we found this 5-centimeter tumor underneath his breastbone. Within a week, it was removed. Had he not had it removed, it would have metastasized in the next 6 months or so, and he would have less than 5 years to live. As it is, he's cancer-free. The tumor is gone. It was stage one. But you can see the bright light shown with our post-processing, that's algorithmic processing, that works extremely effectively.
So this is pretty interesting, right, you guys? You guys didn't even know that this technology exists, and yet it does. I'll tell you, back in 2010, in the summer, I worked with a radiologist where we had found that people have missed calcification of the aorta when they're doing abdominal scans, MRIs, and CT scans. Well, we focus on CT scans. And so radiologists just look, you know, because most of them are, just so you know, and that was the field that I wanted to get into. If I was going to be doing anything, it would have been radiology. But so I did a lot of time within the radiology department. And so I was part of that study. It was about using patient data from that were suffering from hemaptysis. And we were scanning the data, and I was looking to see calcification of the aorta that would show up on abdominal scans and how that is early detection. Now, that's with very remedial technology, not the technology that Ventnor is talking about right now. The attention that you should have in what he's saying right at this moment and where he's saying it. This is the World Government Summit. A lot of people haven't even heard of that. The World Government Summit is a conference that happens over a few days, right? And it's held in Dubai, right? It's in Dubai. And all the nerds get together. Now, the question you should be asking yourself is, why is it called the World Government Summit? And it's in Dubai, you know, in the UAE, just hanging out, and all these people get together. The partners that are actually part of it most of the time are, you know, organizations like the UN, the IEE, and the European Union, very big movers and shakers. Now, in 2018, during the summit, they were all, the main idea for it in the discussions were about AI ethics and using artificial intelligence to generate positive information and the dangers of it, transhumanism. It was a very interesting year. And so, again, I say many of them are looking to inert technology to be merged with biological technology. Now, as all of them are on that page, except for Ventnor, who's all about just the biology and how we can use technology to assist the biology, but not merge it. I mean, even though he jokes, yeah, I'd totally love to like have a USB port and just upload French or something. That's not how it works. I mean, obviously, if you can decode your molecular programming, it would be easy to rewrite it. And they've been doing that for years through vaccines, especially the ones that are the flu vaccines, because they are more active and allow for more transcription. And this is where CRISPR comes in. This is where other technologies come in. So it is inevitable that technology evolves to this point where we have the technology to keep us healthier faster and to find disease faster. I remember, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but it was years ago when I first came stateside and jumped on to my path here that I've been on and got into healthcare studies and in healthcare in general. I always said to myself, if I ever won the lottery, the one thing I would do is set up in every city that I could, every major city, a nonprofit where a person can go in and get one of the most advanced MRIs from top to bottom annually for free. That would, with the technology that we have, I mean, now you could take pictures in the dark and AI can fill in the blanks. And as he explained to you now, this guy had an MRI and suddenly that lit up brighter and he could see it because it was precancerous, stage one, and it removed it. So that would be beneficial for us. So these are the benefits of using these incredible minds that we have that create these algorithms and these predictive analytics to be able to fill in the gaps and help us to remain healthy. The problem is always a double-edged sword. This knowledge and this ability is incredible power. And with that, they can choose to not provide it to other people. This is where that comes in. And with the wrong people in power, and we see that for decades now, we've had the wrong people in power for a couple centuries. I mean, since the beginning of time, really. But for now, for us in modern history, the past two centuries, we have had difficulty snubbing out and suffocating, you know, with goodness and with, I would say, love and affection and with hope for humanity and trying to advance humanity as a people. You know, we've been fighting against an invisible enemy that's right under our nose. So
one of the areas that has had a huge impact is in prostate cancer. I'm sure the men here know there's two kinds of prostate cancer. There's the kind you die with and the kind you die from. High-grade prostate cancer is the kind that you die from. And so the MRI readily picks up high-grade prostate cancer. You can see the bright orange, reddish-orange areas. That's where the post-processing algorithm says there's a tumor. So we've diagnosed these in about 3% of men over the age of 50. They get surgery or radiation, and every one of them now is 100% cancer-free. If those metastasize, the five-year survival rate is 28%. Here's another example. You can see these tumors lighting up very brightly. These are lymphomas, and they were simply treated with chemotherapy and radiation. We detected them before they became metastatic cancer. None of these individuals had the slightest hint that they had cancers. In the U.S., 1.5 million people get diagnosed with cancer each year. They just didn't get cancer the day before they were diagnosed. We carry cancer sometimes for months, sometimes for years before they grow big enough to cause cancer. cause problems. So we're finding this in about 5% of people over 50 that think they're completely healthy. So think of your health system that but basically all the healthy people in this room, 5% of you have a major tumor that you're not aware of. And you'll only find it when it metastasizes or gets big enough to cause problems. From the MRI, we get metabolic data as well. We can tell how much fat is in your liver. And liver and organ fat is one of the most important predictors of your longevity and disease. You can see we can integrate this across the entire liver. We can integrate it across all the organs. We're finding elevated fatty liver in about 23% of the population across all age groups. We don't know yet what percent of these turn into fibrosis and require liver transplants, but it's going to be a significant number. There are sets of algorithms that allow us to detect quantitatively the amount of peripheral versus visceral fat, the exact amount of muscle that you have, so we can give you a very clear picture of your health status at a metabolic level. We can tell whether you have pre-diabetes using chemicals in the bloodstream that we sequence with mass spec. I mentioned that we do contrast-free MRI. Even so, we can get these incredibly gorgeous pictures of your vascular system.
So just so you know, that about 33% of people that take contrast for their MRI, it's like a radioactive dye, then go on to suffer through kidney failure because it does affect them differently. Some people have severe allergic reactions because there's a lot of iodine. But if anyone's ever gotten it, it makes you kind of feel warm, like you're going to pee yourself too. And it outlines everything they need to see. And he can do this contrast free. Now, fMRIs, I saw a comment fly by somewhere. Those are functional MRIs. Those actually look at the glucose, right? Sugar. That is what our body works with. So that's how they see interactivities within the brain. And that's why you have those MRIs mostly.
Without contrast, just using the algorithm to tell the difference between water molecules. This becomes very useful because in 1% of people, we're finding brain aneurysms. Brain aneurysms are usually discovered when they start bleeding badly, you get bad headaches. Usually it goes on to people dying from these. Here's another one that had to be operated on right away because it was close to a centimeter in size, and the neurosurgeons thought that it was likely to burst at any moment. These are now treated as an outpatient, just putting a coil up through your blood vessels. These can be treated and you go home the same day, which is very different than having a high risk of death. 1% of the population, despite age, has a brain aneurysm. So you can calculate at least 4 or 5 of you here have a brain aneurysm that you don't know about.
And that's true. I had a friend of mine, her daughter just one day died. She was a young girl, 17, and God rest Eleni's soul. You know, she just died of a brain aneurysm. She was healthy, never had heart problems, nothing. And that just happened out of the blue. It just instantly. So a lot of people do have that, and that's because of the genetically modified diets we have and external. Remember, he said that I can give the nature part, not the nurture part. See, finding the issues of the nature at the moment, like a snapshot. So this operation warp speed, you can see in order to have warp speed, you need to go to those that have been way ahead of the game for a long time.
The MRI is advancing very rapidly. In 15 minutes in the MRI, we can get a complete cardiac evaluation, and the computer prints out the report before you even finish. In another year or so, the MRI will be able to see inside your coronary vessels and tell you the exact status of your heart with heart disease. We also do 4D echo that gives us these pictures of the four vessels of the heart. We can actually look right down your different heart valves and look at them. And with Doppler shifts, we can tell if there's any regurgitation and get the exact status. We also do cardiac CT scanning, which measures the amount of calcium in your blood vessels. And this is something where this is showing up in earlier and earlier populations and more in a female population. So right now we're seeing...
And just so you know, the ladies out there, the reason that we're protected and we can have all this bad stuff going on with our hearts is because we reproduce. And the minute we stop menstruating, that's when all the cardiac issues seem to appear. So it's more of a protective thing as well. I just wanted to point that out.
Calcium plaques in about 12% of people. Half of these are under the age of 60. We have one woman in her 40s that all four coronary arteries were blocked. She has no history of heart disease. She's not obese. But she's now being treated, having this knowledge. We use remote sensing devices. So by wearing a simple patch that records your EKG for 2 weeks, we can find out whether you have episodic atrial fibrillation. I'm sure most of you know that's one of the major causes of strokes. And it turns out multiple people have episodic AFib. Here's three that had it for 8 hours a day, probably while they were sleeping, and they had no awareness of it. So simply putting them on anticoagulants saves their lives.
So I just wanted to say very great comments in the threads like, will my insurance pay for it? I mean, a lot of people have insurance and they won't pay for an MRI unless you've exhausted tons of x-rays or CTs or seen all these specialists. Well, I'll tell you what, when I came up with the idea that I was like going to put an MRI facility that would provide a whole body scan MRI for free to anyone that would just walk in, you know, you have a capacity of how many you can do a day. I actually submitted a proposal while they were tidying up, loose ends in the Affordable Care Act, because even though it was passed, there were a lot of loose ends. And I provided that because that would actually save the government a lot of money. If every person over 65, at least, was to get one of these MRIs from top to bottom, it would cost the government less for those that are on Medicare, right, to treat them. And so, again, I'm reformulating this proposal. I mean, I started it 2 years ago, but because President Trump hasn't done anything significant to change it yet, and now that he is, I've been working on that for a few months on the side to see how I would word it to make it attractive and how to make proposals for the under 65 and over 65. See, I was at least targeting the over 65 because when you put to the government, hey, you can save money, they like it, right? Anything to save money. But the Affordable Care Act really threw that out the window with all these contracts with these major insurance companies, private insurance companies that bottleneck the ability to access pharmaceuticals. And with the rising price of pharmaceuticals, that was difficult. So I am finishing up, like tidying up a proposal that I had already put forward, moving along with the that it's done for, right? That pharmaceuticals are going to come to more regulated and cheaper prices, that they will be equal access across the world, and then kind of put it out. Hey, we need one for our veterans. We need one for, average people that, pre-existing conditions obviously would be covered, because if you get an MRI like this every year from the year you're born, you can preemptively ensure that you do not get sick, ergo not lose money, ergo not get that sick. So this is a proposal that I've been putting in, because if we put the investment into that for preemptively securing our health, I mean, you'd love to get a annual review and say, you put on this weight, but the reason you put on this weight is because of this imbalance. Let's fix that. Hey, looks like your thyroid's going a little bit downhill, so let's fix that. Hey, you have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Here's how we're going to fix that. And suddenly people are healthier, more productive, and we catch things early. It's all about catching things early. Specifically now that we're in a time where we don't even know what we're ingesting in our bodies, because that it was the whole purpose, okay? Because that gets us sick. We don't know the chemicals we're breathing, the food we're eating. Is it real food? Is it Impossible Burgers? Is it just chemicals? It's garbage, because everyone wants to make products for cheaper. So this is something I think that would be a great dovetail to what he's doing now that it has been put forward about the pharmaceutical, balancing out. The reason I tell you this is because I'm trying to introduce you to the concept of what we're going to see post, Vachina, right? Post Vachina, and who are the players and what to expect. I thought it was a great follow-up so you can understand why Kodak played into this and understand what it's terrifying, because like Craig said, you can predict everything. Like imagine being pregnant, right? And getting the DNA of your baby and already knowing what they're going to look like when they grow up, knowing what health ailments they may have, not just, hey, are they going to have an extra chromosome? Are they intact? But a whole profile on them. That's actually scary. I mean, I'd prefer the surprise. It's scary in one sense of what can empower someone that has power to do with it. Another scary thing is people that have a lot of money and say you're a match for a heart for them. Like say Soros needs a heart and he could just scan the database and find you. You may have a car accident. You know what I'm saying? So there is a very... Any innovation, any advancement is always a double-edged sword, because for some reason, well, not from some reason, Shadowgate, remember, is your shadow. What is your shadow? The casting, I would say the evil that can follow. So with every good, there's always evil following behind, trying to suffocate it. So this is how you have to see things when things are happening in general. So let's finish this up so that way you can take this in and understand it. This guy isn't new. He's been around for a while, but he's a rebel. You know, he got in a fight with Bill Clinton and told him, you're just stealing tax money. I could do this faster. And he did it in 9 months. So he's a pretty, pretty badass guy.
We do a comprehensive analysis of your brain, and we can predict whether you have Alzheimer's disease and when you're likely to get it. So we can combine the brain imaging with the genome data in a novel fashion, but it's not clear cut. Here's an individual with two copies of the APOE gene that puts him at very high risk for Alzheimer's disease, but his hippocampus is large, totally normal, and there's no hint whatsoever for disease. So what we see, we see an increased risk in about 24%. The genome predictions, about 82% of those are right. But we have new algorithms, and this is just an example of what we're doing with all diseases, that combines the genetic data with all the unique imaging from different parts of the brain to predict when and if you will get Alzheimer's disease. So we can predict your risk, down to the month when you're likely to see symptoms. We do all kinds of other predictions on your height, your weight, your BMI, your eye color, your hair color. And we wanted to go further. We wanted to see if we could predict from your genetic code your picture. So using machine learning, we did a study on 1,000 people where we took 3D pictures of them and sequenced their genomes. And here's just a couple of examples. This is the a smooth subject from the photograph. And here's the prediction straight from the A's, G's, and T's of the genetic code. Here's another example of a young male. Here's the computer prediction from his genetic code. The more ethnic diversity, the better. Here's a young African, and here's his computer prediction straight from the genetic code. We show these just because we have this health intelligence cycle where we're combining new discoveries in the genome from having hundreds of thousands of genomes. So we get very accurate data with actual clinical phenotype data that says whether you have cancer or not, says whether you have Alzheimer's or not. And this is a whole new preventative medicine paradigm that turns medicine on its head and will save countries billions, if not trillions of dollars if they adopt these approaches. Thank you very much.
So it's great to hear him say the same thing. People will save a lot of money, but think about it this way. This is where the danger kicks in. This is why we should be more active in our government going forward, because winning this election, which we will, even though they're going to tell us that nobody won or they won and then nobody won and we still haven't counted votes while they go through impeachment, because that's what they're going to do. We've got another impeachment coming, and it's going to be done during the transition period while they're denying the counting of the votes. So, like I said, after the election is where the hard work begins, because you need to make sure that you have people that represent you in office. Because if we have the same type of people that are in office now in every single seat, that information can be the difference between your life and your death, your child's life and their death, because they can choose to not give you treatment. They can choose to exclude you, and they could choose to have a better way to kill you. They can amplify a gene and say, oh, that sucks. You totally got cancer because they gave you a medicine that amplifies the gene. Oh, you got a heart attack maybe because they amplified the gene that increases calcification or, stymie your ability to, keep your, electrolytes balanced, whatever it is, because they can do that. So these elections are very important for how we move forward as a society, as a global society per se, right? Because this just doesn't affect our country. This technology is available worldwide, and it's already been available worldwide, okay? Because that's from 2018. And we've had these devices since 2014. And I can tell you, we've had them. We've had technology that is insane for decades and not being shared with the people. That is so, so, so disgusting. So here we are at that, we're at the precipice, right there. And we have to decide, are we going to take action to have more control of how our country runs so that we avoid situations like this? Or do we sit back and just become subjects? Because these tools are the ultimate tools to make you subjects. So on that note, I'm going to let you guys go with a few tidbits. So we had a lot of, there were some interviews that Millie did yesterday that were incredible. A lot of things coming out. I've been tweeting about it. That's not part of Shadowgate 2, just so you know. It's coming in later. I'll probably be discussing more of that this week at some point, but it's quite interesting. Very, very, very interesting and how things are coming along. I just wanted you armed with knowledge for what you're going to be seeing coming forward for health. And like I said, I am recycling my old proposal for over 65, mirroring that with veterans, right? Of course. And then putting forward one for the general population that has private insurance or can't afford insurance or is on Medicaid to see how we can go about in getting these MRI scans that already exist. But to think about it, all these governments can already have this information, but they're not providing it. All these special MRI scans already exist, but none of the governments are providing them to their citizens. Why wouldn't they do it if it's going to save them money? Oh, because they have other plans for us. You see what I'm saying? So God bless everyone. I will see you guys tomorrow at regular time, 12 to 2, as always. God bless.
I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart.